by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. This is George Butler. We've got quite a week going on this last week. We've had quite a bit going on. We've had squabbles in the White House. There's no telling. There may be civil wars. Zach, who reports into Alex Jones' show quite frequently, is our first clip this evening. And he describes a warlike attitude between the war hawks and the peaceniks, the moderates, I guess is the way you would describe it. But here comes up about a really nice clip with Alex and Zach calling in from outside. So listen carefully to this. It's very, very insightful.
Joining us until about 40 after or so is Zach. He is a high-level intelligence source known by name to me. He's been on national TV. He's been in newspapers many times. Zach's his real name. The government knows who he is. Said the FBI come pick him up twice over what he's covered. But at higher levels, he's now been basically released to tell the truth. He concurred with our sources inside the hostage rescue team and the FBI the day after the still unsolved situation in Vegas, that was a internal Saudi civil war operation. And that it was a gun deal gone bad, that the Saudis that came into town used the gun deal with the guy they'd already bought guns from to get in there and get weapons they couldn't bring in on aircraft. Now, to give us all the latest developments that unfold and to discuss the civil war going on inside the White House that we talked about last week, that he talked about on Friday, that they planned more strikes and sanctions. People said, oh, Zach's wrong. They said limited. Then you learned a few days later they want more strikes. They want to put troops on the Russian border. They want confrontation. All of that confirmed out of CENTCOM. And now Zach has traveled to the West Coast to learn more. So we've got a lot of articles to go over here with him that tie into this. He can't get anything classified. He just, as a citizen, can give you his breakdown. But Mattis wanted congressional approval before striking Syria. He was overruled. Again, Kushner security clearance downgraded. We've got the Saudi crown prince boasted that Jared Kushner was in his pocket. All this nexus is together. Zach, thank you for joining us.
Yes, Alex, it's great to be back on and be able to connect some dots here. Obviously, a lot of moving pieces, but yeah, just to get right into it. The idea that this strike was for North Korean consumption and to kind of, you know, pressure them into do whatever they're doing is completely ridiculous. That deal with North Korea was already signed months ago, as we spoke about, as everybody already knows. And the idea that North Korea has lost sight or is unaware of the might we have as a military or the idea that we might go to war with the country is completely crazy. That has nothing to do with, not to mention the fact that we have just about 100,000 troops currently permanently stationed around their country. The idea that we would strike a sovereign country to do that is so problematic in its thinking that I don't even know what to do. Because what we got here is this, folks. Listen, I'm a huge Donald J. Trump fan. There's just no question about it. Donald J. Trump is the most effective president in U.S. history, and he has done incredible things. But this is not a professional sports team. We don't have blind trust, okay? It's not I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan, and no matter what the record is, I stick with them year in and year out.
Well, sure, Nikki Haley is openly in rebellion against the White House, shooting her mouth off, and they're out of control.
We cannot have blind trust, not in me, not in you, not in Donald Trump. The only thing we can have blind trust in is the Republic of the United States and the upholding of the Constitution. So he's done a lot of great things, and obviously I'm a huge supporter of him, and I did everything I could to get him elected over Hillary Clinton. But what happened in Syria was so problematic, and in the covering up and the conspiratorial thinking of why he did this, oh, it's only limited, trust the plan, is wrong. This is not it. If you're going to be in Syria, okay, and bombing something. Why don't you bomb some ISIS strongholds? Why don't you bomb some ISIS fighters? He comes out and addresses the nation and says, we specifically attacked Assad sites. Assad sites, the same sites the Russians have been protecting with their blood and treasure for years. You don't come out and say that. Okay? He called him an animal leading up in the days up into it. This isn't about ISIS. This isn't about some, you know.
That was signaling trying to kick off a new war in the Middle East and try to get Russia to respond. That's what I pick up.
100%. Mattis didn't want it. The military didn't want it. They said you gotta go to Congress for this. But obviously there's some different thinking there. Trump, he's a smart guy. He weighs all of his options, and in the last minute he made a choice. And now the question becomes, why did he make that choice? And to me, it's very obvious. I believe a deal was struck. In fact, I know a deal was struck with the Saudi Arabians. Remember, everybody, the very first trip that Donald Trump made as the president of our country, where was that to? Right into Saudi Arabia, waving the swords right into Riyadh, okay? Now, while Donald Trump was, you know, doing all the, you know, making deals, kind of on camera, signing everything, make no mistake, Jared Kushner, okay, had already had these deals drawn up. Jared Kushner was in there wheeling and dealing, guaranteeing Syria and Assad to the crown prince. He guaranteed that in exchange for prolonged weapons planning and prolonged weapons plans being sold, different systems, different weapon systems, our support of them doing and taking over the Middle East.
Yeah, $300 billion, and Trump likes that. He likes to get jobs for America. When we come back, let's talk about the rest of the story with Zach, who's a great source on the other side, and tie it into everything. I mean, that's why I got mad on Friday. My gut was this was part of a huge double cross and a shakeup inside the White House and an attempt to start a wider war. Then I tried to back off of that and say, well, maybe it's about North Korea, maybe it's limited. But now you see it's not. There's a big schism, a civil war inside the White House. I'm Alex Jones, your host. I don't like to get up here and talk about World War III or a new world war. But if you look at what the West has been doing, it's encircling Russia. It's fighting with radical jihadists. It is doing horrible, horrible things. And 5 years ago, our military, if you just tuned in, said no to Obama, no to the globalists. General Dempsey went and said, we're not doing this. We're going to back the Russians going in. Assad's made a deal to have elections after they're beaten. And Assad still says they'll do that. Trump says, that's a great idea. I'm all for that. He gets briefed by the military to basically ask him to run for office 2 years before he does. This was already in the works. Trump, you know, kept trying to organize other people to resist this. So that's why I got so mad at Trump, was because I went home and thought it wasn't going to happen because Mattis said it wasn't going to happen. And then recklessly, he gets countermanded, obviously. And Trump gets convinced to do it by Bolton or some other loon. And we're off to the races, and I didn't know the Russians were going to respond. They didn't. They stood down. And I guess it's because behind the scenes, our military is telling them, hey, we're trying to stop this. That's what I already had. But we've got Zach, who's got a lot of great sources. And again, I know who Zach is. Zach, tell us, am I accurate in what I said, or what's really going on? What's the latest? What's unfolding? Is Trump becoming compromised with the raid on his lawyer? That's what I was thinking. Or did he just get manipulated by the neocons? Why is Haley now stomping around like she's the president, acting all arrogant and attacking the White House? This doesn't look good.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right on several issues there, and there's several moving parts that are all contributing to this. So, yes, the raid on Cohen's office was very problematic because, like we discussed earlier, Jared Kushner, in that meeting, that inaugural trip to Saudi Arabia, there's some very troubling recordings that will be out there, and everyone knows, and it's just going to be out there.
By the way, you said that Friday. I'm sorry. You said that Friday. I just forget how awesome you are. I have the article. You said that Friday. It's now in the news saying there's recordings that he said that. So you broke that here.
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, he's in uncertain terms, he's basically promising the head of Assad to the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, which is obviously problematic and treasonous on a constitutional level. But why do you think, and we could pull it up, Jared Kushner, the capacity that he's at in the White House, had his security clearance downgraded. So he no longer gets the daily intelligence briefings that he was, you know, reading and, digesting every day, because Jared got sloppy. Jared started shooting his mouth off and, you know, selling certain information essentially overseas. And you don't get your security clearance downgraded for no reason. There's obviously a reason behind there, and it's become obvious with some of the recordings that are out there, and obviously he had his security clearance downgraded. That's a major concern that just was news one day, and then it's just, oh, no big deal, on to the next thing. But when it comes to this strike, obviously this happens. And then when you see the disruption with Nikki Haley, we did this 6 months ago. I told you, Tillerson was compromised. Haley was compromised. Sessions is compromised. I understand what the other side is saying on in the intelligence communities, in the QAnon community. It's my opinion that Sessions Hutchins is compromised, Haley is compromised, and Tillerson is compromised. That's been my line for 6 months, and I'm sticking to it.
And they keep saying stick with the plan. Just as QAnon puts out some stuff that's true, and I know you know who those guys are, this isn't a plan now. We're getting off the Trump plan. And I like Bill Mitchell. He's coming on next week, but he says, well, there are people that support an agenda, so they supported Trump. And there are people that support Trump. No, I support Trump and the agenda he originally promoted that lined up with reality and what I supported. I won't support him if he goes sideways.
So understand, all this really started around when around the Breitbart issue. Excuse me, not Breitbart. Right around when Nikki Haley started running her mouth and doing her own foreign policy here. Nikki Haley, the plan is, this is it, folks. I don't know if anybody's looking into this, but this is definitely the plan. Nikki Haley is looking to run in 2020 with Mike Pence. They're hoping that in this raid, and they have probable cause here, if they go after this witch hunt, to actually impeach Donald Trump, if they could pull it off. And they're planning internally for Donald Trump to be impeached and Nikki Haley and Mike Pence to run on that 2020 ticket. You could guarantee
it. And notice, Saturday Night Live, and all of them for months are acting like Pence is perfect, he's the guy, and now the headlines are today that Haley and Pence are trying to line it up behind the scenes. Very, very wicked behavior, if true.
Absolutely, and very dangerous behavior. I mean, listen.
Well, notice how the media always says Pence is perfect, and Pence could do no wrong, and he navigated it perfectly. They're going to burn Pence as soon as he flushes Trump. He better not be stupid.
Exactly, and this all happened with the Breitbart day, Steve Bannon, you know, left the White House. Everybody picked their sides right then and there. Trump came out and notice he announces his 2020 run, and he knew what was going on. But the issue is when you have several compromising issues, what do you do here? And in this case, obviously the initial trip to Saudi Arabia, he's fully aware what Jared Kushner's doing, but he got in over his head and he had a security clearance downgraded. They have promised, and whether you like it or not, they have promised Assad's head to the crown prince of Saudi Arabia. And why do we care in America? We really should care, because this is the continuation of empire building, the military-industrial complex flexing its muscles as hard as possible. And for all the good that Trump's did, I'm really, really surprised by this, and I'm not sure exactly what is behind the scenes that really got him to do it, but there's a couple things that are reasons for concern that I could see him doing this. And the recordings are one of them. Jared Kushner promised it there. And, you know, it's no surprise. When it came to 9/11, a majority of those hijackers and the funding all came out of Saudi Arabia. They're turning over. They're becoming, you know, more modernized. But at the end of the day, this has been a very cozy, problematic relationship that's been based in money, oil, and blood for quite some time.
Well, I know the Saudis looked like they were in ecstasy when Trump was over there, and they claimed they were going to stop funding their terror groups. And so just because one faction of the Saudis got rounded up doesn't mean the more powerful faction was really just the same group. And that's all part of that super deceptive stuff that they engage in over there that causes so many of their political long-term problems. But I totally agree with you, Zach. And here's the thing. Trump is dealing with very dangerous people that want power and who want to bring him down. And the globalists hate Trump because he's America first, he's done a lot of great work, and he has to know that they're never going to stop till they destroy him. And people like Pence and Haley also want to hedge their bets behind the scenes, claiming that they're really against Trump. So I think there's some survival instinct there. The real survival instinct is to double down on Trump and support him as long as he follows the original agenda, because again, once the left gets Trump out of there, they are going to go after everybody. They are loaded for bear. They are crazed. They know that we're pulling America out of their jaws, and so they are on a death mission right now. They call it a death battle.
Absolutely. And Nikki Haley engaging in this Russian trash talk is just ridiculous. Coming out of a Trump White House saying, addressing the UN, looking at the Russian.
Yeah, who do you think wrote those tweets calling Assad an animal and you're guilty? And I mean, all this ridiculous crap.
Calling him an animal, we're locked and loaded. She reiterates, I don't get confused. It's obvious. The script's written. They're hoping for an impeachment internally. They tried to pull off the 25th on 45. That didn't work. He had resolve there.
The wheels came off on Russiagate. Now they've raided his lawyer. There's not a lot there. They're desperate.
They're desperate. They got some stuff in that raid. To me, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter. But for the nitpicking impeachment process, they're going to draw that out because.
Oh, sure. You can call it money laundering if somebody used, you know, campaign money that people paid through to launder it, you know, to pay off some bimbo. Exactly. It's incredible.
And what happens about the next Syrian chemical attack? So what do we think here? Oh, wow, that was affected. So based off of fake intelligence, a completely fake video, we bomb them. That's the pretext to do that. So what happens when there is the next chemical attack? We must respond again, correct? Because if I was not a fan of Bashar al-Assad, I would be doing everything in my power to set off anything in that country because it's going to guarantee a response.
Sure, so let's briefly talk about how Trump saves the bacon and the country. We'll be back with Zach, final segment. All right, Zach's got to go in like 10 minutes. I got a plug. We talked to the factory. There's only so much deep earth crystals left on the X2. It's only happened one other time. I'm hoping to get more of it. They put us over a barrel at the oil companies where we try to get the derivatives of this. It's the purest iodine in the world from 7 to 12,000 feet. I hope we can get more. One time we couldn't get it for 8 months. And when we could, they jacked the price up. So we have got enough for two more big runs. They're doing an emergency run right now, so more's coming in a couple weeks. So I'm going to keep the sale going 25% off and just keep it going until we sell out. And then we'll have maybe a run and a half left because we're doing a half run right now. And, again, I'm paying a lot more, but we're keeping the price low for you. The good halogen, learn all about it, InfoWarsStore.com, InfoWarsLife.com, or 888-253-3139. And Zach, I want to get into the big enchilada we were discussing during the break. Just lay out in that 3 minutes what you were telling me, because it's absolutely on target about where we are right now. And the American people need to be very aggressive, very vocal, very focused after you tell them what you're about to tell them, because the deep state is getting ready to make their move on the president. Go ahead and tell them.
Absolutely. I mean, what's going on right now is a very entrenched internal conflict to have our president impeached and have him double-crossed by Haley and Pence in their power structure there. And this is an internal battle that has been waged momentum-wise since John F. Kennedy had his brains blown out there. That's the type of event, the type of thrust-like event of a space rocket, of a spaceship taking off. I mean, if you're going to be that bold to do that to Kennedy, you're going to have generational individuals in that chain of command all the way up to what we're dealing with right now. And Donald Trump is in the fight for his life, in the fight for the Republic. This is it. He has to double down. He has to do whatever he can to expose them, not buy time, because they are coming for him, and they are going to put him in vulnerable situations to either be impeached or executed. It's just going to happen. The writing's on the wall. There's internal conflict, which is in his own chain of command immediately, let alone what's going on behind the scenes. We cannot let this happen. He needs to double down. Where are the military tribunals really going after the deep state? Do not appease them, because they will not give you an inch. They're coming for your neck. That's all there is to it.
I studied the Nazis and the Soviets and others. There's always this mental illness, this arrogance. But when you look at the globalists, they all have the sickness of this arrogance. Trump, you can see it's a strength, a mission. It's the opposite. It's strength. With them, they all look so wimpy. They're so condescending. They're so sanctimonious. And they're so arrogant, this Soros judge that raided his lawyer and all of it. And it's like all the crimes they've committed, are they really sanctimonious? Are they really on a power trip? Or is it really an act? They're scared and they're acting powerful. I just know this. I got Soros and globalists. You can see, Zach. I'm as big an enemy now as Trump. Give me your calculation on why they're so trying to get me right now, lying about me, misrepresenting, trying to destroy me right now.
For the remarks that you made on Friday, they know that you have a blind allegiance to the truth, to the Constitution. And for all the good that Donald Trump did, you still came out and said, this is unacceptable, this is a bad sign, because it was your thinking, your base, and this sort of it's taken on a personality of itself. It has a life of itself. It's Americana is what it is. It's the revitalization, the revolution, the second American revolution. You are the speaker for that. And regardless, especially now, I expect you would think you would get some slack by speaking out a little bit here. Not going against Trump, but calling out what he did. You would think you'd get some slack. I see it as the opposite, because I can see, no, you're not paid out, and yes, you're real, because you're going to hold the line of truth.
By the way, I didn't say that to get him off my back. You notice they accelerated that suit and filed on Monday. No, absolutely. I know they got even more pissed when I did that, because I'm not selling out. I'm never selling out, and they hate the fact that our audience isn't selling out, and they just don't like InfoWars with people like you and countless others come on. They don't like anybody having a voice.
Exactly. And I just want to let people know, I mean, all the attacks were fine. This is not about a record. This is not about blind adherence. This is about the second American revolution. I'm wishing the best for Donald J. Trump. I really do pray for him every day, and I want him to do well. But I understand he's in the fight for his life. It does not make you un-American or unpatriotic to know the forecast, see the storm coming, and let people know. It does make you un-American and unpatriotic to know the forecast, let the storm wipe everything out, and act like you don't know what's going on. That's ridiculous. So when this thing happened in Syria, I thought it was a very bad sign. I knew it was a very bad sign, and we have to support the president. We have to double down and really support him because
I agree. Everybody has to call Congress, call talk radio, call everything, and say attack politically. It's time to, and by the way, this just broke, Infowars.com. Finally, GOP demands criminal investigation into Clinton, Lynch, Comey, evidence of conspiracy to overthrow duly elected president surfacing. They now have all of the McCabe emails, all of it proving that Comey lied to Congress about the Justice Department not being involved, that his investigation was by itself. They have them. And Trump has to fire now. We have them dead in the sights. We have them. He cannot wait. If this is the real moment of truth, I'm not backing down. I feel great. I mean, I actually feel like I'm now filling into the shoes of my forebears. I'm so alive. I'm sorry. I actually love all this. And I don't. And I'm not somebody that's into masochism. No, I don't like pain. But I like victory, and I like not being a slave. And these globalists are evil. So they have this letter. We'll cover it more after Zach leaves. It's on Infowars.com. But, Zach, looking at this and looking at the left and looking at how they're weaponizing, how they're building up, how they're doing all this, people have to know that they're going to take everything when they're done. Hillary was planning to get rid of free speech, implode the economy, re-educate America. They had it all lined up with all the big corporations, the sensitivity training, the ADL, the Southern Poverty Law Center. They're all still going ahead with the plan, but we're fighting back. And that's what I'm going to tell the globalists. They're insane. They could have stopped, regrouped, backed off, maybe come back later. The fact that they're hard charging in now, trying to intimidate us and only thinking one-dimensionally, that's why I feel so good. No matter what happens to me or Trump, I can tell you right now, or Matt Drudge or any other patriot, we're winning. And now Tucker Carlson and now Ingram and now Rand Paul coming out saying false flag and this is bull and it doesn't make sense. You can see that people out there have light of justice in their eyes and that good knows their kids have no future if we don't stand against this. The only way we lose, folks, is rolling over. And those of us that are under attack have got to be men. And once you get past the fear, there's not fear. It's good. There's no more fear. I don't fear anything they do to me. And it's not because I'm a hero. I know they're bad. We've got to face them down. Go ahead.
Absolutely. First things first, we have got to warn and sound the alarm on the next chemical attack that will occur in Syria because it's just obvious thinking. Of course, if you were not a Bashar al-Assad fan, you'd be doing everything in your power to set something off in that country. So when and if that does happen, we have got to guarantee that it gets tested, that we have people go evaluate what would really happen, that the intelligence is verified, and that we have an approval on a secondary strike because one's coming. If you don't think that, you know, that's just ridiculous thinking. It's coming, guaranteed. So when that happens, we have to make sure that we don't pull the trigger, you know, get right in there with that.
And Trump knows that, and he's trying to act like, let's just say it, it looks like Trump has gone along with the plan to make it look like he's being reasonable, to cross red lines, and then when the rebels cross it for him, we're going to attack and take out Assad, betraying everything Trump said he would do, and turn the country over to be broken up, occupied by Saudi Arabia, so every non-radical gets murdered and tortured to death.
Exactly, and they have a nice little line saying, oh, there'll be an army comprised of Arab countries taking care of Syria. The U.S. is going to pull out. Whoa, 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 whoa. What do you mean an army comprised of Arab countries?
That's an invasion force, just like they did before.
They have an army. There's a Syrian army. It's a sovereign country. We're not taking our army out and putting another army in. That's called Libya. That's called Afghanistan. That's called everything else.
And by the way, the Syrians will fight. I mean, look at the civil war they just fought. They're going to continue to fight.
They are in the fight for their life every single day. I mean, it's every single day could be the last, your last day on earth there. So they're dead serious about it. We need to be dead serious about it. This is the perpetual momentum of the military-industrial complex and the intelligence agencies since John F. Kennedy's brains have been blown out in the back of that Cadillac. This is it. This is everything. This is 9/11. This is Gulf of Tonkin. This is Vietnam. This is everything is leading up to this moment where we have got to back our president and really get through to him and say, do what you can because this is it. We're not going to have another Donald Trump in office. God knows what follows behind Donald Trump, but it will not be the chance that we have now. We must seize the moment.
That's right. Syria is the last domino, and then it goes into war with Russia. The whole nine yards, they've got it planned. Jack, come back as soon as you can to give us more briefings. Yeah, I know you got to go. If you got to go, if you want to add any other points, you can hold over. You got to go?
That's it. Yeah, I got to go. Gotta go.
All right, thank you very much. I know you're at your lunch. There goes Zach.
A little over a week ago, last Friday, it was reported, they were talking about the attack. It occurred on the 13th. It was Friday the 13th. that Trump finally decided to launch an attack into Syria. Now, Zach's been reporting that there was false evidence presented to President Trump, which caused him to go ahead and launch the attack. And now we have a couple of reporters, freelance and independent reporters, going in there, reporting live on the scene about a week later, a little less than a week later. The first one would be Robert Fisk. I'm going to play that clip first. He wrote an extensive article for the Independent newspaper out of Great Britain. And the other one is Pearson Sharp, who's reporting for OAN, okay? And that's considered to be, it stands for the One America News Network. And, of course, the left press, the leftist press, reports him as just a talking head for Trump, see? But anyway, these are the two clips coming up. This first one is Robert Fisk on the ground, and he talked to people at the clinic where the video was shot, and he comes up with some interesting opinions. And here we go with Robert Fisk, and I'll put up on our site his extensive articles, a click off on that. But listen carefully to this. Robert Fisk.
Spirit Radio Podcasts.
I've just been in the town of Duma. I found the clinic where the film of the children dropping at the mouth and having water thrown at them was made. But the senior hospital doctor, who actually spoke very good English, who was there, told me that the video is real, that they were not suffering from gas poisoning, but were suffering from panic and hypoxia, as he put it, because of the amount of dust in the tunnels in which they live. All through years, people in the Duma area have been living beneath their own homes in tunnels and basements. And that night, there was a lot of scaring by the Syrian army and by the Russian Air Force. And it produced a huge amount of dust and debris in the streets, and many people were finding it difficult to breathe. And when they reached the clinic, according to the doctor, someone shouted gas, and they panicked. But he did confirm that the film, the videotape, was indeed taken in the clinic there, the same clinic where I actually interviewed him in.
That was Robert Fisk reporting for Independent newspaper. Now, we have a little more extensive clip coming up here of Pearson Sharp reporting for OAN. And he's going to we've got a little over 7 minutes and a half, I think, 7 minutes, 50 seconds or so. And OAN stands for One American News Network. It would be considered a very conservative publication supporting Trump. And so that's how the left even describes him. But this report was very well measured and so forth. What was interesting is The Intercept wrote an extensive article about Duma, and they had photographs of Pearson Sharp with their reporters, way, or some other reporters that were in a group way back in the background there. And they said that they were criticizing Pearson Sharp for not getting the right place of the attack and things like this. So I don't know where Intercept is coming from sometimes. They're a little bit on the left side. But anyway, we're trying to get down to a real truth on this Duma attack. And listen to Pearson Sharp reporting live from the scene. So listen to this carefully.
All right, and we do want to take you live now to Syria, where One America's Pearson Sharp is there on the ground. Pearson, what's the latest you've learned there?
So we want to announce that One America News has an exclusive discovery. We went to Duma today. We got exclusive access, and we were brought into the town of Duma, where the alleged chemical attack happened. We were brought in with a government escort and shown the areas where the chemical attack allegedly happened, and we got to speak with residents in the area, and we were even able to visit the hospital where the white helmets showed the video of the people being hosed down. So when I went into the town, we didn't really know what to expect, but we were brought to one of the neighborhoods close to where the attack happened. I spoke with a number of residents there, probably about 10 residents in that neighborhood. And this is, keep in mind, this is about a block and a half away from where the attack was supposedly happened. Not one of the people that I spoke to in that neighborhood said that they had seen anything or heard anything about a chemical attack on that day. They said that they were going about their normal business. Everything was pretty much business as usual in the neighborhood that day, and they didn't see or hear anything out of the ordinary. So we wanted to make sure that we covered all our bases, so we drove down a little further, and we visited some rebel headquarters from Jaish al-Islam, the terror group that was holding the town until recently. And I got to go down and I explored some of the tunnels in the area. I walked through some rooms where they were making weapon manufacturing. There were entire rooms filled with mortars, they were stacked from floor to ceiling. It was just—it's very shocking to see how much weaponry the terrorists had piled up in that area. After that, we went through the square where a convoy—I'm not sure who the convoy was from, but it was—it looked like it was a Syrian relief convoy. And they had just lines of residents turning out, maybe 1,000 people long. It was a really long line, turning out for bread and supplies, water, food, clothing, things like that. And so we talked to a few people there, and I went up to random people. I know there's a lot of concern from people that the residents being interviewed are plants. They're Russian operatives, or they're staged interviews, or things like that. And so we just randomly went up to different people. No one came up to us, and interviewed probably about 30 or 40 people throughout the town. And consistently, not one person in the entire town that we talked to said that they had seen or heard anything about a chemical attack. They said that they'd lived there for 15 years, 7 to 15 years, some of them. And, so they're longtime residents of the area. And many of them were very close to the site that was allegedly attacked on the day that it was allegedly attacked. One man said that he was within 50 meters at the time they say it was attacked, and he heard and saw nothing out of the ordinary. When I asked them what they thought the chemical attack was, they told me, all of them told me, that it was staged by the rebels who were occupying the town at that time. They said that it was a fabrication, that it was a hoax, and when I asked them why, they told me that it was because the rebels were desperate and they needed a ploy to help get the Syrian army off their back so that they can escape. And so the residents told me, and again, I'm using that phrase a lot, the residents told me, because I wanted to be clear that this is not an opinion, this is not propaganda, as some have accused, that this is simply facts that we found on the ground when we were in the town, things that we saw firsthand. So the residents told me that the terrorists staged this attack to get the Western powers to attack the Syrian army and get them off their backs so that they could escape. And that story was told to us by numerous people. So I asked them also what they thought about President Bashar al-Assad, because that's also a big question for a lot of people. You hear people like Boris Johnson and other leaders saying that President Bashar is terrorizing his people and that he's being very brutal to them. And again, this is just repeating facts that are out there in the media right now. And so when I talked to the people who lived in these towns, they specifically said that they loved Bashar al-Assad. They thought that he was great, and they said that, I asked them how they felt about the moderate rebels that they were living under, and they said there's no such thing as moderate rebels. They said that the people that they were living under were starving them to death. One man said that he'd been there for the last 7 years and was being starved to death. His family was starving because the rebels wouldn't give them any food. They said they hoarded the medicine and took everything for themselves. And he said if anybody complained, you're risking your life. They'd kill you. They'd kill you and your family for complaining or raising any problems. He said that he was very grateful that President Assad had liberated the town, and that they were completely in support of Assad. After that, we went to Ground Zero, where the attack allegedly happened. It's a big open square with a large monument in the very middle. It's probably about 100 meters in a circle. And it's not clear exactly where the strike happened in that square, but it was that square that the terrorists claimed was hit by the chemicals. And so I walked around it. I looked at everything. There were some mortars that had exploded in the concrete. but nothing looked like a chemical attack. And when I asked the people there, there were soldiers there, there were military police there. They said they'd been stationed there for a while, and they hadn't seen anything that day. They did point out to me that there was a hospital nearby, which is right off the square, actually, that had a basement. It was like two or three stories underground where there was an emergency field hospital that had been used by the terrorists to treat their wounded. And so we looked around, and one of the buildings in that area, there was several, they're all about 15 stories. One of the buildings in the area had a large bulwark of dirt built up around the edges to apparently protect it from strikes so that people inside wouldn't be hurt. And we walked around, and there was a tunnel carved into the side of that, and you could walk down into it, and that was where they'd built this makeshift hospital. And it was actually very sophisticated. They had a car park, a garage, they had a maintenance bays, things like that. And we walked down several floors underground and into the room, the hospital room that you see in all of the videos where the people are being hosed off. And it's still being used right now as a hospital. There's still doctors there taking care of people. But now those doctors are working for the government instead of working for Jaish al-Islam, the terrorists. And so I spoke to one of the doctors. He was a doctor in training right now. And he was on staff, on duty at the time of the attack that day. And I asked him what he saw that day. And he told me that it was a routine day for him. He said it was very dusty that day, and so a lot of people were coming in coughing, just, you know, irritation in the throat and things like that, and normal war injuries because, you know, it was part of a war zone occupied by the terrorists. And they said that there was nothing out of the ordinary, and while they were going about their rounds, suddenly, out of nowhere, they said a bunch of strangers burst into the room screaming that there was a chemical attack. And they started hosing. They brought in allegedly victims, and they started hosing them down with water. And so the doctors, you know, they freaked out, and they grabbed hoses, and they started helping and stuff. And the strangers who brought in the victims were videotaping everything. This is all gathered from translations, so it, you know, I may have missed something. I'm not trying to say this is exactly what happened, but this is what I gathered from what the doctor told me, speaking Arabic through my translator. And they said that they brought in cameras and they were filming everything, and as soon as they had, you know, washed everybody off and stuff, they packed up and they left. And that was the end of it. And the doctor said they didn't, when the people were there, they didn't see any indication that there was a chemical attack. They said that people's eyes, when you get burned by chemicals, your eyes swell up, they're puffy, you can't breathe, you're coughing. They said the people that came in looked totally normal. And so they didn't see any evidence of a chemical attack. I also talked to the head surgeon of the whole hospital, and he confirmed that. He said that day there were zero deaths in the hospital. He said he had personally seen no evidence of a chemical attack. He also said that the weapons inspectors, there's two conflicting sides to this story. The first doctor said that what he thought were weapons inspectors came in, they toured the hospital, they just walked around, and they left. He said they didn't take any samples. They didn't, you know, test the walls or the hospital beds for any chemicals or anything like that. He said they just walked around, looked at stuff, and left. The head surgeon said that no inspectors had come whatsoever. So I'm not sure which one of those is true, but either way, the inspectors haven't revealed anything that they found, so it could be somewhere in between. In any case, no evidence has been found so far that there was any chemical attack. That's the bottom line from the story. That's not to say that there wasn't one. I don't have definitive proof either way. But going there and looking for any evidence, the dozens of people living there I interviewed, the soldiers working there, the military police, the government officials, the residents, the doctors in the hospitals, no one saw a single shred of evidence of any chemical attack. And I think that's the main point to take away from this. We're going to keep investigating it and keep looking into it, but for right now, that's where the investigation stands.
We can use your help. Call your cable provider and kindly demand that One America News is added to your lineup. Call today.
That was Pearson Sharp reporting from Douma in Syria. So that's very interesting. What we have coming up next is Laura Loomer, and she's quite a gutsy type reporter, journalist. She went to Comey's opening there, his book presentation, book signing in New York. And we have about a two-minute clip here of that. And she asked a question directly of when he met with the president, why didn't he disclose that the dossier was paid for by Hillary and the Democratic National Committee. So he didn't like that, and they ushered her out. But in the meantime, what's really interesting is the video, and I'll have a click off on the video tonight on this site that you can see it. But there was a very interesting person sitting right in front of Loomer, and she was a member. Her name is Susara Taylor. She's a member of the Revolutionary Communist Party of the. And I'll make some further comments here after you listen to this. Listen to this carefully then.
Hey, Mr. Comey, hey, how is it ethical to brief the President of the United States on an unverifiable and salacious dossier? And how is it ethical leadership to not tell him that his political opposition, Hillary Clinton, paid for that? You didn't disclose that information. Why didn't you disclose to President Trump that his opposition paid for the material? You are not an ethical leader. Today, Mr. Comey, 11 lawmakers, Mr. Comey, today filed a criminal referral against you.
Ma'am, you're going to have to leave.
You're going to get prosecuted, Comey. You're going to get locked up.
Let's go. Let's go.
All right.
You should leave.
All right.
Is your bag?
Yes, yeah, my bag. It's my coat.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
You're going to get prosecuted, Comey. I'm going. You are not an ethical leader, Comey. Not an ethical leader. 11 lawmakers today, Comey, filed a criminal referral against you. You're going to get prosecuted.
Laura Loomer doing her thing there at the book signing for Comey. And she's really a stand-up person. I mean, she gets out there and hits it pretty hard. But the woman that's sitting right in front of her was Susara Taylor, a member of the Revolutionary Communist Party of the USA. And what's interesting about this is that going way, way back to the Fabian Society in England, is that the true creme de la creme, the ultra-capitalist, the ultra-elitist, you could say, had thought up a way to address the masses and the revolt of the possible revolt of the masses against the upper levels of the society. And what they finally came up with was to create a communistic society for those on the lower levels, and they would control through benefits and allocations of resources and so forth. And they create like a pecking order of control. And actually, that's basically exactly what they have done. And this is what we're up against. This week not only saw criminal referrals on the top people, Comey and Hillary and all those other top, Justice Department people and FBI people. But some are saying now that James Comey has ruined the reputation of the FBI. And there's a lot of FBI agents reporting on a lot of conservative programs, especially the Fox News Network. And they are, to a man, really expressing a very, very similar opinion that what James Comey has done has destroyed, much of what people thought about the FBI. And then also those top officials at the Justice Department have done the same thing. Trump is reacting very, very fiercely to these criminal referrals. And especially yesterday, we got to see for the first time these so-called Comey memos that were so talked about, and bandied about in a lot of different ways. The left would say one thing and the right would say another. Well, the first reading of this, my cursory reading of this, said that there were things in there that were misleading. The way that Comey had portrayed some of these memos was entirely different than what was actually there. In fact, it appears from the study that I've done so far and the reading that I've gained from the reading the memos. And there are some redactions in there also. So about seven of the memos of the seven, it's pretty well accepted now that four, and being reported widely that four of the memos contained classified information. Now Comey came out originally and he even testified he gave some of these memos to his friend, attorney friend, a law professor at Columbia, who in turn gave them to the New York Times to create the call out for a prosecutor, a special prosecutor. But if you read the memos, actually, President Trump, they're very complimentary, actually, to President Trump's position throughout this whole, Russian collusion delusion, you could say. But they're complimentary in the fact that he tells Comey, President Trump, that if you know of anyone, any satellite friends or people around me that are involved in this, you report that to me. I want to know what's going on. And he did not say things that, well, you could even take for it to interpret as any obstruction of justice. And there's not any talk there. And, of course, there are periods there where they'll talk alone. They just want to go. Comey wants to go in and talk to the president alone. And that's accepted. Comey actually indicted himself in a way by making notes that were actually to what everyone, including himself, had betrayed about those memos. Now, the Office of Inspector General is releasing further information all the time that point towards a closer look at Comey and his violation of federal law. It did not matter whether those Comey memos were classified or not. He said at one time in one of his interviews that was personal property, but it was not. Anything that you're doing for the government, the federal government, in any official capacity, is the property of the federal government. And you can't really take it freely from your workplace, even whether it's classified or not, and distribute that and give that to other people without permission. And so anything like this is not necessarily classified, but it's confidential business of the federal government, and it's against the law to take anything outside the building and distribute it in any way, much of like he did on his own memos that he declared were not classified. But it appears right now, without final proof, that some of those memos, four out of the seven, were classified. And so it presents a real problem for Comey in the sense that he's going out here on this book tour now. And you heard what Laura Loomer, she called him on the carpet for not telling President Trump. And he admits that. See, in an interview recently on ABC, he admits that he disclosed this report, this very scandalous report, to President Trump. But he did not ever disclose who paid for it. And that's a major, major problem that Comey has. Anyone in their right mind would have told President Trump that the Democratic National Committee, along with Hillary's campaign, paid for this report, this dossier, as it distilled dossier, as it has become known now. So we're seeing that. We're seeing fighting going on in the White House. We're seeing Jared Kushner's financial interest on that 666 Fifth Avenue property have big problems. So he's got financial problems there, not maybe his own personal, because I think he transferred out of that corporation that owned that when he took on the special advisory to the president. There's criticism that he probably gave Trump advice to do the bombing in Syria. I think it's appearing now where Trump was fooled for the second time a little over a year ago, He bombed once an airport over there, a military airport, airfield, and this time he's done it again. So it's beginning to appear that they're presenting him false evidence or information that's causing him to go out and lash out at Syria with these bombing attacks. And it's come out lately though that he did inform the Russians of this oncoming attack that occurred on the 13th to keep them out of harm's way. But I mean, there's other rumors and evidence too that he did inform even the Syrians of what he's doing, because he didn't want. And right now there was no fatalities from the bombing that occurred, as far as we know. If you take and you go in to Wikipedia, there's a list in there of individuals and institutions and units and so forth that are on both sides of the Syrian so-called civil war. There's no real civil war there. They've created it, people over here in our country, along with our CIA and other interests, created that war in Syria, and they've destroyed, the country has virtually been destroyed because of that. So, as a result, we have to look at this very objectively, and Trump at times is being, this John Bolton was not a good appointment as National Security Advisor. He's much a hawk, and he's in there for warlike. He was full support of the Iraq war, the Iraqi war, which we should have never been over there. And so he's not really the man to be in there as security national advisor, national security advisor, I should say. But we're seeing now, Zach is coming in on Alex's program. We're seeing a greater and greater propensity. QAnon is being analyzed and reported by Jerome Corsi earlier in the week after the bombing. He assured us that stick to this plan and things like this. But if QAnon is up higher, and he evidently is, in the Trump administration, then he was presented, if there was fake information to cause Trump to take this action in this of this last attack, then QAnon was there and viewed the same information. That's why he put out, he was pro-attack on this, see, through his own network that he's, QAnon's postings that are being made and then being analyzed. I think there's tens of millions of people following QAnon right now. And there's another bulletin board system that's been going up also that's Navy-oriented, I think. But Jerome Corsi has come up with some very, very good analysis of this. And he's one to go in on Twitter and so forth. I first posted on Twitter that right that night when we heard about it, you know, the bombing, and that was last Friday, Friday 13th, April 13th, that Trump acted too rashly, too much haste, and he should have just slowed himself down and gotten more reports, gotten people on the ground to give us actual evidence of this so-called gas attack in Douma before he launched any attack at all. And I think he was fooled again for the second time, and this does not bode well for his foreign policy decisions. He's going to have to try to slow himself down a little bit and take an edge off that hate and resentment that manifests sometimes. We have really all kinds of people out here that are chiming in now on the internet. It's amazing. Some of these bulletin board systems and these postings that are going on about QAnon and stuff are springing up everywhere. You're seeing many, many people on YouTube posting all kinds of videos and reports. And it's getting to be now where about anything that happens, there's someone out there that's going to beat you to the punch. But I watch closely the different postings going on from all over. And I'm very careful about who I repeat and who I report on as far as taking their source material. And, you know, it's just like anything, you know, in reporting, you've got to be careful on your sources. And you've got to be, yeah, there are certain people that you come to trust, their judgment and so forth. There was a recent death that occurred in Russia recently. And this man was riding on the Bradley forces. There are some quasi-Blackwater-like forces that are being mobilized and used in not only the Ukraine, but in Syria, and they're Russian-based. They're irregular forces, see. They're not really officially Russian soldiers and so forth. They're much like Blackwater, a private type of militant commando group that's being utilized. And there was a journalist that I'll place up a listing on that tonight on this site, and you can go in and read more about that article. But I don't have the man's name on the tip of my tongue. But there was a journalist that supposedly jumped off a 5-story balcony. I mean, that's always the case, isn't it? I mean, these journalists are, you know, you start writing about very sensitive matters like that, and you find yourself jumping off balconies, things like that. But these are the people to respect in trying to bring us some of this truth that's very hard to get to. But how do you get to the truth sometimes? It's just like this Duma thing that we're seeing now. It started off with these white helmets going in there. The minute that they appeared on the scene and were you know, promoting this and disseminating information, you knew that there were problems. I just knew there was problems with the story, because they have been caught before in the past of fabricating videos and false and propaganda. So they just did it again, see. And what's really, you know, saddening about the American public especially is that anytime you present these little kids and they're suffering, or they appear to be suffering, like they did in this recent video out of Duma, people are so compassionate about those children, and the children are hurting and things like that. And I think we have to be very compassionate for our children. But now that we've got one young boy, and he tells a story, and I'll post the site up there that you can read it. It's all in Arabic, so we don't have an English version as far as I know. But one 12-year-old boy was told about, go to the hospital. They're going to have rice and dates there and things like that. And he did go to the hospital. And they had him in the video, his suffering and all this. He said later on, no, he wasn't sick at all, but there was food there to eat, and they didn't have anything at home to eat that day. These people over there have been suffering just a tremendously amount. And we went in there, and our intelligence agencies, along with Hillary and Barack Obama, they created this war over there. They smuggled arms in there through Benghazi, using Turkish transport freighters, and they created this war. And this is how evil, and they did the same thing in Libya. So we're just trying to put out a little bit of the truth here, and trying to get back to peace. And I think Ron Paul, he called this thing in Duma. He didn't use the word hoax, but he insinuating that that's very well what it could have been. And even Ron Paul is beginning to report from that side of the coin, you could say, which is a great improvement. I've been waiting for him to come over with some those kinds of opinions for years. But he's a good man, and both Rand and Ron Paul, father and son, are really fine people, and we've got to support them as much as we can. I want to thank everyone for listening tonight, and we'll have all those pickoffs up there for you to look at. Thank you, and good night. Bless you. Bless all of you. Good night.